Doctor Who Short Trips, The Man Who Wasn't There by Ian Atkins, read by India Fisher. Have a Scotch egg, Charlotte Pollard, the Doctor offered, setting the hamper down. His picnic chair creaked with his movement, sounding briefly over the jungle whispers around them. I'm fairly sure they're not supposed to be blue, Doctor. Oh, Charlie! The best whole grain in the universe comes from Metabilis 3. Charlie eyed her lunch suspiciously. And that's why it's blue, is it? I thought you were looking for new experiences, new wonders. Can't that start with blue Scotch eggs and move on to something like this? He gestured at the valley before them. When Charlie had read of Tanganyikan jungles, she'd imagined something slightly more dense than the New Forest, but she realised now she had never truly understood the word jungle. Despite the TARDIS landing close by, it had taken 2 hours to hack their way to this path. Before them it dropped away to thickly clustered treetops. I'll have something in a while. That Martian porridge we had for breakfast filled me up. I told you not to have 2 slices. They sat back, taking in the scene. The Doctor poured tea from a seemingly inexhaustible flask. There now, he toasted her. Midsummer's Day, 1859, Tanganyika. Beautiful surroundings, and any minute now you're going to meet your hero. Charlie glanced along the narrow path, as she had done periodically all morning. It was as empty as it had been since a curious monkey an hour ago. Actually, no, it wasn't. Doctor, there's someone there. Is this him, your fabled explorer Marchmont? Mom Marsh, Doctor. And no, it isn't. Charlie stood and took a step towards the crouching, nervously peering man. He was naked save for a loincloth, his dark skin gleaming in the sunlight. Hello? She asked slowly and loudly. The man backed away and made a low sound, which to Charlie's ears was almost, but not quite, words. I don't understand you, Charlie said carefully. The man's response was just as before. I'm looking for a man, Mom Marsh, man, like him, she indicated the Doctor. He has climbed mountain today. Big mountain? She pointed to the peak that loomed over the landscape. The man looked at the Doctor, then at the mountain, and said a word that could have been a question. Yes, Charlie said. Mountain! Is that mountain, Doctor, do you think? Mom Marsh has climbed it. Can you help us? She glanced at the Doctor. Is there something wrong? No, Charlie. Sorry, I think the translation circuits must be glitching.
Translation circuits?
Something in the TARDIS. We should be able to understand each other. Not, of course, that Pieter would have needed the help.
Charlie drew herself upright.
Absolutely. If he could make himself understood, then so can I. She turned back to the man and spoke loudly and slowly. Hello! Can you tell us about the man who climbed the mountain?
With her arms, she made a triangular shape, then pointed to the Doctor.
Mountain? Man?
The stranger looked first at her, then the shape. His bemused face changed to one of frustration. He spoke again.
I'm sorry, but I don't understand you.
She glanced at the Doctor.
Can you do anything, do you think?
The Doctor nodded to the space where the man had been. Branches were swinging back into place, covering his retreat.
Oh, was it something I said?
Later in the TARDIS library, where dark roundled wood lined the walls above the bookshelves, there was a smell of old paper and used-up days.
Here you are, Charlie. What you're looking for is probably over there under children's reading.
Charlie looked at the ridiculously small section and snorted in disbelief.
Hardly, Doctor. I think... Oh!
As with all the favourite books of her life, Charlie knew it as well by the spine. the colour, the size, the writing, as by the cover. Slowly she reached out and picked up the volume from her childhood. Pieter Montmartre, A Diary of Discovery. Doctor, it feels brand new, she marvelled, as she turned pages of her memory, one after another. As with its wine cellar and games room, the TARDIS is surprisingly accommodating when it comes to selections, the Doctor said distractedly as he searched through another section. As Charlie traced long familiar passages, he put a book into the pocket of his frock coat. It's here, Doctor, she called at length. Midsummer's Day, 1859. How Montmartre came down from the mountain, the first European explorer. Look, there's a picture. Really? The Doctor was at her shoulder. Oh, a drawing. It was just a child's foolish infatuation to start with. That heroic blonde man, so different to the people in the house. All his adventures, all those places, the things he'd seen and done. And now I've missed him. The Doctor took the book from her, checked the cover, then flicked through the pages. Hmm, he said. Not to worry. It's early days for travel journalism. Far too high a chance of error or misreporting. It could have been a year earlier, later, perhaps simply not the 24th. Let's nip ahead a little. It says here that in 1862 he taught people to read in Shigatse during the incense festival, and I happen to know exactly when that is. The TARDIS had been left behind on a shallow hill, far enough back that their arrival had gone unseen. Almost immediately after emerging, they had heard the sounds of music from the village. Charlie walked, clutching Montmartre's diary like a Bible. I used to dream of being able to explore like Pieter. My world was growing so small, losing all those times where you were the first to find something never seen before, new places, new people. The Doctor shrugged. Hadn't those new places been seen by all the new people? Charlie looked at him. Of course, but I meant seen by people like me. Are you different? The Doctor teased. Oh, Doctor, you know what I mean. They rounded the corner of a path to see a village of small dwellings painted in rainbow hues. Banners flew in the breeze. The people were singing. Oh, it's so beautiful, Charlie breathed, feeling tears in her eyes. The music slowed and then went silent. No, don't stop, Charlie said under her breath. She realised they were being stared at by an increasing number of locals, with bright clothing and braiding in their hair. Don't stop, she said in a loud encouragement. It was all rather wonderful. But the group had gone silent. Small children were encouraged back into parental arms. Some of the women drew in behind their menfolk. We're looking for a man, Charlie said slowly, after a nod of encouragement from the Doctor. She was stared at with bemusement. Pieter Montmartre, has he been here, please? We have seen no one like... A villager gestured at Charlie and the Doctor. Like this. Charlie noted with relief the TARDIS translator was now working and opened the diary to one of the few images of her hero. Look, look here. See? Are you sure? There. She traced the writing under the picture of a blonde man striding through a jungle. Pieter Montmartre, no? The man looked back at Charlie, sensing her disappointment. He gave something like a shrug. Any of you? The Doctor asked, carefully looking across the villagers. Montmartre, tall chap, possibly with an overbearing sense of pioneering, but his heart in the right place. A child had tottered towards the Doctor and was playing with the tails of his frock coat. The inhabitants watched with amusement. Charlie tried the book again, brandishing it like a relic. Please, she asked more desperately. Montmartre! Look, there, you see? Pieter Montmartre! Have really none of you seen him? The child was joined by another. The colour of the Doctor's coat seemed to fascinate. Doctor, please tell me you've got the wrong day, Charlie asked over her shoulder. She saw something in his eyes. What is it? The doctor produced from his pocket the small book he'd taken from the library. "This could be very serious. You're not the only person influenced by Montmartre." He opened the book and showed it to her. "The Little Book of Starships. The UEF Montmartre, 2488 AD. Twin Ion Thrusters, Phase Space Drive. Pilot, Julia Ryrie, born 2455 in the United Kingdom. Hero, Victorian explorer Pieter Montmartre." Ryrie's journey opened up the galaxy to Earth's empire. Within 500 years, humanity had a home not in one small solar system, but in the stars. The universe would never be the same again.
"You don't sound entirely happy about that, Doctor."
For a moment, the Time Lord looked disappointed. "Sometimes a force for good takes a while to get its act together. But ultimately it works out. And yet if Montmartre is gone,
then would any of it happen?"
"Time is a very ugly weapon with which to fight," the doctor said, putting the book back into his pocket. "It's like throwing a brick at a web to kill a spider. Things unravel and snap. This could be very, very bad."
"You think someone's done this deliberately? Taken Montmartre away? To damage the future?"
"It wouldn't be the first time, though that's a redundant term in the circumstances." The doctor tried to smile. "Let's hope this is all just poor dating, and that in a few minutes we'll be having a cup of tea with Pieter Montmartre and laughing at how worried we were. Come along, Charlie."
The TARDIS doors opened on a nighttime scene, with lanterns burning on brackets in the streets of Khartoum as the amber of sunset drained from the sky. Charlie stepped out from the police box. Normally, she'd have enjoyed the strange new smells, the feel of a new atmosphere against her skin. But the doctor was worrying her. His demeanour had been ever more grim as they searched for Pieter Montmartre. A trip to the Reform Club of 1866 had been without result, save for an embarrassing row with Charles Dickens about an error in Great Expectations. Then a trip to meet Montmartre in America turned into 5 hours of waiting for a ship to arrive, and absolutely no one disembarking was aware that Montmartre was supposed to have been on board. Indeed, there was a sense of disappointment in those they'd spoken to that they'd missed meeting the explorer. Charlie squinted at the diary in the half-light.
"We can't even be sure of the date this time, Doctor. According to this, he was in Khartoum for some months in 1868.
The doctor gave a hopeful smile.
"Well, months, plural, means at least two, so there's a 1 in 6 chance at the very least. Those aren't bad odds."
"Doctor, remind me never to let you take us to Monte Carlo."
The doctor looked offended.
"What? It could be far less likely."
"Oh, Doctor, really? I'd prefer it a certainty that I could go up to someone here and say, 'Hello there, could you take me to Pieter Montmartre, please?' And they'd say,
'Over here, miss,'"
said an accented voice.
"Over here, miss, thank you. But 1 in 6.
She stopped. The doctor addressed the local who was watching their conversation.
"Excuse me, you can help?"
The man stirred.
"You looking for Montmartre? I can take you to him."
The doctor's smile was wide.
"Excellent. Come along, Charlie. We'll just say our hellos, get you an autograph, then next stop, Monte Carlo."
So I steadied my rifle, looked straight down the barrel, and as the beast tensed to spring, boom, I bagged the blighter.
There was a ripple of approval from the speaker's audience as the doctor and Charlie were shown into a small hall.
"You're looking relieved, Doctor," Charlie whispered out of the side of her mouth.
"That's because I am, Charlie."
The room was a jumble of lecture theatre, study and bedroom. There were piles of folded maps and books, bags and packs of equipment, a camp bed, even a few stuffed animals. One was a surprised-looking lynx, which clearly had never expected to be surrounded by so many people, nor so full of straw. Charlie glanced at the others in the room.
There were a few locals, but largely Europeans sat there, hanging onto every one of the man's words.
"Well now," said Pieter Montmarsch,
in a far more English accent than she'd expected.
"More visitors! Welcome to Khartoum!"
Charlie felt herself blush at the man's attentions, even though part of her was feeling a sour disappointment. Although blonde, the man was otherwise quite unlike her heroic portrait. He wore a stained vest, his face was too pink and shiny, and he was looking older than his early 40s age.
"Your English is very good," she said.
Charlie experienced a flush of panic as she wondered if this was just the TARDIS translating again. She shot a look to the doctor.
"Is it?"
He nodded silent confirmation.
"Thank you,
Charlotte. Charlotte Pollard."
"Charlotte. I was privately educated in Eton in my youth. Of course, that was long before I embarked on my epic journeys."
"Yes, about that,"
Charlie asked, voicing her doubts despite herself.
"So where were you? Midsummer's Day, 1859. You were supposed to be climbing the Mahali Mountains. I waited the whole day to meet you."
I was there,
the man said gruffly, after thinking about it for far too long. He reached awkwardly down for a half-empty bottle. Charlie felt something finally break inside her.
"If you were, I'd have seen you."
"How on earth could you say that?"
Montmarsch said belligerently, shakily topping up his drink before replacing the bottle on the floor.
"Slip of a girl like you. Bit old for fibs, aren't you, what?"
"I think one of us is lying, yes. And I so wish it was me, I really do," Charlie announced. "But it's not, is it?"
She held the man's gaze, and as she watched, the angry fires of denial burning within became the cold ashes of guilt.
"They won't believe you,"
he muttered at last, nudging his head towards the room's occupants. Charlie's mouth opened and shut a few times. She looked at the doctor. He shrugged.
"The police won't have an identity theft unit for another 100 years. It's our word against his."
Charlie bit her lip, clenching her hands.
But this man is an imposter," she said loudly.
Montmarsch raised a mocking eyebrow. In her mind, she could hear the ensuing conversation and how they'd ridicule her. She went up and kicked the bottle into the corner of the room. The doctor hurried to catch up as she made her way down the streets.
"Don't be downhearted, Charlie. So what if he was an imposter? You've sowed the tiniest seed of doubt. I suspect he'll give up soon."
"But supposing Montmarsch is really like that, some half-stewed person living off a legend. I imagined him so dashing, unstoppable."
"They do say you should never meet your heroes, you know."
There was something in the tone of his voice. "Have you, then, met your heroes?"
"Oh, yes, Charlie. Yes, I have."
"And how was it?"
"Well, nearly half of them tried to kill me, but the rest were an absolute delight."
He stretched out his hand and waited for her to take it.
"Come on, let's find yours."
As the reassuring blue shape of the TARDIS came into view, Charlie stopped. In the distance, a man stood beside the police box, alternately looking at it with disdain and picking fluff off a three-piece suit. At the sight of her, he raised a bowler hat.
"Doctor?"
she asked. "I see him, Charlie." The doctor's expression was grim. "Stay here." He closed the distance between him and the stranger and began to talk.
"Ah, good morning, old chap."
The doctor's response was cold. "What do you want?"
"Oh, no pleasantries? I've been practicing the local banter for this very occasion."
The doctor eyed the man's pinstripe suit.
"Then you're out by about 100 years and 3,000 miles.
The Time Lord looked over the doctor's shoulder at where Charlie waited.
"She's quite the specimen, isn't she? Excellent hair."
His face crinkled with a fond memory.
"I had a wonderful cat until that business in the capital with..."
"Charlie is not a pet."
"Oh, no,
Quite so, old boy, quite so. I'm sure she understands every word you say. How old is she in human years?
The doctor tried to ignore the words. Look, what is this about?
Word to the wise, old boy. They're going to notice, you know.
Notice? Notice what?
That your kitten there comes with a particularly tangled ball of wool.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I understand, really I do. You develop a fondness for them, even if they're not quite house-trained in matters of anachronism, as 'twere.
Charlie would have died in the R101. What was I supposed to do?
The Time Lord picked theatrically at his fingernails.
Well, a policy of non-intervention has always been rather popular.
He reacted to a noise in the doctor's throat.
But that's not for everyone.
Will you just get to the point and leave? Not necessarily in that order, of course.
Something has been changed in the history of your planet Earth. What was a flourishing galactic empire in their 28th century is now 8,000 light-years of vacuum surrounding a radioactive rock. It seems that a key voyage wasn't made, but we can't trace the disruption to its source.
That's not like you, the doctor added sourly. I thought you were all wise, all powerful, ridiculously grandiose.
We can't trace the disruption at its source, the Time Lord stressed, because someone's muddied the waters for us, shall we say.
Muddied the...
The Doctor followed the Time Lord's gaze.
Charlie?
The Time Lord turned to go.
If you'd not blundered into this, we could have taken care of it. But now... They're going to notice, you know. You'd better get this sorted out before they do, if you want her to reach a ripe old existence.
Charlie tried to listen in vain, but something about the stranger kept her in place. Only when he moved away into the forest did she hurry over.
Who was that man? What did he want?
The doctor hesitated. He unlocked the TARDIS doors and gestured inside.
Someone's meddling in Earth's development, and they've found a vulnerable point to exploit.
Montmartre?
Yes.
It's very important we find him, or discover what they did to him.
And how are we going to do that?
Whoever removed Montmartre from time, they'd have as much to go on as we did. So we keep looking in the places we can rely on, and catch them in the act. The diary, Charlie. Pick somewhere.
Charlie brought out the book. It would make sense to start at the beginning, then.
No. Early information, early news. We can't rely on it. There's no certainty that Montmartre was gone when we couldn't find him in 1859. And a DMAT gun can be fired at a man aged 70 so that he never had his first birthday.
His lip curled with distaste.
Time is a weapon, you see. Nasty. Fire and forget missiles, for example.
What do they do?
You fire at someone, they get forgotten.
The clue's in the name, really.
There's no need to be rude.
I'm sorry, Charlie.
He looked at her, noted the hurt expression, and patted her shoulder.
Truly, it always rattles me when I have to do their bidding. We'll just sort this out and be on our way.
But where to?
The doctor eyed the diary. Whoever we're up against would have had the same problem. There are only so many certain points to find Montmartre.
He sighed.
Pick a page. If there's a concrete date, we'll try it out.
How about... This one. Valencia seemed very red. The wood of the buildings matched the clay of the soil, all of it baked hard and dry. Charlie had expected it to smell, but the heat seemed to have burned that away.
they'd visited a gentleman's club in Paris to find that Montmartre was a member but hadn't been there for months. And when they questioned the three staff, they were given three different descriptions of the visitor and three outstanding bills. In Antwerp, they watched a train depart from a busy platform, but as much as they asked about Montmartre, nobody had seen him. They'd tried a local journalist who was unaware of the celebrity that had slipped through his fingers. And now here, the panelled walls of an expensive hotel with gold inside and beggars without. The doctor warily watched the clientele as they entered.
"Keep an eye out, Charlie. If Montmartre is here, then our enemy could be too."
Charlie approached the man at the reception desk, putting a smile on the fresh worry the doctor's words created.
"Hello. We understand that Pieter Montmartre is staying here."
The man behind the desk gave a thin smile and shook his head.
"I'm afraid not, sir, mademoiselle."
"Oh, but..."
Charlie started, but the man looked smoothly over her head at the doctor.
"However, his personal secretary, Mr. Portis, has rooms here. Is he expecting you?"
"Do you know, I'm not sure," the doctor mused. "I wasn't expecting him, after all, and these things tend to work both ways. We were more set on meeting old Pieter."
"Mr. Portis is Pieter Montmartre's representative here in Valencia. I'm instructed to direct anyone to Suite 301.
The man in Suite 301 introduced himself as Silas Portis. He was a thick-set figure with teeth stained tobacco yellow, a waistcoat that strained against too many rich dinners, and an ankle with gout.
"Can I help you?"
"I certainly hope so," the doctor said quickly. "We were hoping for a bit of a chat with our old friend Pieter."
"You know Mr. Montmartre?" Silas frowned disbelievingly.
"Oh, you know, passing pals, almost acquaintances, faint friends."
The man's attention turned to where Charlie had been looking through a table of seemingly random paraphernalia. She picked up an impressive sextant, looking along it onto the horizon beyond the windows.
"Please be careful with that. Pieter Montmartre used it on the expedition to find the lost valley of Kedraza in 1861.
"But how do we know that?" the doctor mused.
"I mean, forgive me, but supposing some fellow had just bought one locally and passed it off as something else?"
Portis met his gaze.
"That would be utterly unscrupulous."
The doctor beamed with delight.
"It would, wouldn't it? Not to imply any impropriety, of course. I'm sure you're completely beyond reproach."
He shuffled through things on another table. A brush, some crampons, two alpine hats.
"And that all of these items are too. Especially this bona fide, original, one of its kind, never before seen, perfect condition, unbelievably rare and collectible, receipt for the whole lot of them." "Give that back!" the man snarled, reaching out a moment too late.
"Oh, no!" Charlie said in frustration. "Really?"
"You're no more Montmartre's secretary than I am," the doctor said scornfully. "But I'm sure it helps with provenances."
"So you can't help us?"
Charlie turned away, feeling a disappointment that was now becoming familiar.
"I thought we'd finally got somewhere."
"Come on, Charlie. No point in wasting any more time here."
He pointed at Silas.
"But I warn you, this stops now, or we go to the authorities."
They hurried back to the TARDIS. The doctor no longer seemed to be looking out for foes in the crowds, but somehow the meeting with Portis had made Charlie feel that all eyes were on them.
"Doctor, slow down, please!"
He halted.
"What's the very last entry in the diary, Charlie?"
"It's an editor's note. Pieter embarked on an expedition from Cairo in September 1874 and was never seen again. Over the years, there were a couple of searches, but nothing was found. Just a last hotel room, waiting for him to return." She traced the page with a finger. "Oh, I cried so much the first time I read that." The doctor was staring, whether at someone in the crowd or into the far distance, she couldn't tell, but he seemed to be thinking about something.
We should go there.
But, you know, I have a sneaking idea what we're going to find. He hurried off again. It seemed like 100 unfriendly eyes filled the space he left.
Doctor! Doctor, wait for me!
Although the outside sun was bright, the room's shutters had been closed against the city's heat and noise, and a man sat there in the gloom, surrounded by papers and bric-a-brac, in a fog that smelled of pipe smoke and hair cream. Like toys in a darkened bedroom, there were exciting shapes on the shelves and tables, the paraphernalia of the explorer. But Charlie didn't need to see the figure properly to know who it was. Silas. The doctor put his hands into his pockets.
Hello again. My goodness, doesn't the time fly, Silas? Why, it seems like only minutes ago we were standing before you, accusing you of all sorts of wrongdoings. Whereas now...
Now we're going to be doing it all again, aren't we? Charlie said angrily. We gave you a chance to take a better path. But here you are, still passing off your baubles.
Her hand raked through the tables of papers and packages.
I just don't understand how you're still getting away with it.
The man shifted, moving into a shaft of sunlight. It was the same face, but much thinner and greyer. The movement caused a heavy manuscript on his lap to slide down his legs. He caught it and put it aside.
I met Pieter Montmartre. You're acting like I didn't. I helped him. I think this balances it out.
Tell me, the doctor ordered.
Pay me, the man countered.
You met him? Really? You?
The expression on Charlie's face seemed to reach something inside Silas. He was down on his luck, stranded in a village, trading accounts of his glory years for food and drink. Rather pathetic given his reputation. But I bought some things off him. Enough to help his next expedition and enough to make me a small fortune. I tried to contact him to buy some more, but nothing. He was in America in 1865, I heard. There was talk he'd returned in 1866 and was in London for a while. There was some sort of scandal about it at the Reform Club. But by the time I'd got people there, he was gone. I'd run up debts by then, and so I contacted the original dealers I'd used and sold them more items. The doctor smiled at this.
The omission you're making there, of course, is that these new items had nothing to do with Montmartre.
Silas glared.
But surely Montmartre got wind of this? Charlie asked.
Never saw him again. It's my suspicion he died on an expedition to the Vaal River. Certainly he never returned to Valencia.
The doctor had the expression of someone at the retelling of a favourite joke.
And so you kept your little enterprise going, purely to honour his memory, of course. Now see here, Silas gestured at the manuscript. Without me, nothing would be known about Pieter. I've been the one committing him to paper, so that people know about the man. I didn't have to do that.
Charlie picked up the manuscript. Pieter Montmartre, A Diary of Discovery, she read aloud. She blinked.
You wrote this?
I'm writing it, yes. Collating what I know.
What you've made up, you mean?
No, I won't have that. That man was good to me. It's been a pleasure to set his exploits down. And should he ever resurface, I'm sure he'll not be ungrateful to his biographer.
Charlie read some of the handwritten reference notes and felt the room swim for a moment. All sorts of accounts from familiar places.
Doctor, he moved over concernedly, the original notes about the 1859 meeting with Montmartre.
What of them?
She looked accusingly at Silas.
In your manuscript, it's about how Montmartre had been the first to heroically scale the mountain there, how disappointed some other visitors were not to be the first. Yet here,
her finger stabbed down on a crumpled, aged notebook,
It simply says, Day 27, we arrived at village, locals mention a blonde man, Montmartre, on mountain. Replenish supplies, Day 28, departed to begin ascent.
Sorry, Charlie, that's a mistranslation, see? Not blonde, blanc, white. He was a white man.
But it says blonde here, and when it's mentioned at all in other descriptions, he's always blonde. I showed you that picture.
The doctor was lost in thought. He turned a few pages, then some more.
Doctor? Of course, he sighed. It's all from the book. Oh, I should have seen that.
He grabbed her hand with a sudden bustling energy. Come on, Charlie, come on! Places to go, people to see. Thank you, Mr. Porters, you've been most enlightening. We won't stop your very important work, not for another second.
But Charlie wasn't moving. She pointed to the stuffed shape of a surprised-looking lynx on a table beside the bed.
Where did you get that?
She asked, her voice quavering.
Come on, Charlie, let's be off!
Where did you get it?
She insisted at Silas.
He sold it to me. Montmartre. He even said thank you. It was the very first thing. I couldn't sell that.
Charlie closed her eyes for a moment and took a deep breath. She turned to the doctor.
This is all a lie, isn't it?
No, no, Charlie, not at all. Come on, let's be off. Have you seen the Eye of Orion? Oh, you have to.
Tell me, please.
The doctor took her hand and, with a nod to a bewildered-looking Silas, led her away.
The Time Lords couldn't find Montmartre when they contacted me, he told her, because at that point, we'd not made him real enough.
All those times, we just made it worse and worse, didn't we? Asking for him in crowds, simply getting the name known, and then people like Silas and that faker in Khartoum, they let people put a face to a name or believe a bit more.
The doctor watched her face.
In Silas's book, Montmartre taught a village to read, but the missionary account he's based it on talked about a visitor inflaming people with interest in the printed word.
Charlie remembered pointing to the image in the book, watched by all the faces, and saying Montmartre's name over and over.
That was me. Oh, no, this is too... This is horrible.
Come on, Charlie, the doctor said warmly, but she broke away.
But Montmartre was nothing but a lie, she said, distraught. And I told it.
They walked back to the TARDIS, and Charlotte Pollard cried, because in her heart, someone had gone. A day later, the TARDIS materialised in darkness. It was cold and there was a sense of water nearby. Charlie had barely spoken since their return to the time machine. The doctor put something heavy and metallic into her hands. He took his bearings.
Over there, I think you'll want, he said.
Doctor, Charlie countered wearily, what am I looking for?
Over there, Charlie. Any second.
She put the binoculars to her eyes. There was a tiny shape on the horizon, white, angular. And then the sky exploded into brightness. There was a heart-stopping thud of noise. The shape she'd looked at suddenly began to move upwards on a point of intense green light. Her hands twisted at the focus knob, and just for a moment, on the side of the launching ship, she read, UEF Montmartre. The doctor's voice was at her ear over a growing roar of power. If Pieter Montmartre was entirely the work of Charlotte Pollard, he told her, then so is this. And he stepped away, letting Charlie watch as Julia Ryrie travelled to the stars.